SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Del Mar. As the saying goes, we should probably break out. Casey, go reach for the Bing Crosby, which has been kept to a minimum. In fact, I don't know if we've even played it yet this season, which is nearly criminal. But coming to you from Del Mar, and 2 months plus before Breeders' Cup. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964 if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website. Happy to be here. Happy to have Rick Hammerly as a co-pilot. Here we are, Hammer, and between July 15th and what is today, the 19th, we've been together at three different venues.
Well, good morning, everyone. Good morning, Steve, and you're right. And for summertime, I mean, my three favorite venues, obviously, Monmouth Park, Saratoga, and now here at Del Mar. So it's pretty cool. Been able to do a lot of cross-country traveling lately and seeing a lot of good spots, and it's good to be here at Del Mar. And your first visit during the real season. I know you've been here in November, and it's a nice little sleepy town in November, the way the locals like it, but it turns up a notch here in the summertime. So glad you're here for this. And, you know, you get one of those little awards for being in Saratoga and Del Mar in the same week.
Oh, that's right, right? That's a big deal. I hadn't really thought about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can come, you know, 1 year and the next year, but when you do it in the same week, you move up a notch.
You
made it. So we're here. We got into the offices early, and want to thank Craig Dato and Mac McBride for setting that up. And we're overlooking the paddock from a view that you see, but you don't get to see from. We're upstairs above basically where the horses get saddled, looking back into the back of the grandstand, which is kind of a unique view with four stories here with verandas and decks and all kinds of stuff where it'll be full with people today, tomorrow, and then on Saturday, the big day, of course, is Pacific Classic Day.
And I, as you were referencing the Saratoga / Del Mar double and Pacific Classic Saturday, they drew the card yesterday, the full card. On Wednesday, they provided the fields for the Pack Classic, and the rest of the card came up very, very good. And we'll weave into this as the morning goes on, because very, very sadly, a storyline really for the morning, I would guess at least an hour of the morning today, that emerged yesterday. We were traveling, Tina and I, and we got here 11:30 or so Pacific, and got settled into the hotel by about 1:30. Having to put together the story involving the life and contributions to the industry of B. Wayne Hughes. And, I think everybody knew that B. Wayne had been sick for a number of years, but his sheer force of will, I would think, has kept him right to yesterday, essentially. And I even saw some things from the Spendthrift community, Mark Toothaker and Ned Toffee, and of course Ned was in Saratoga this past week. They had a huge the Spendthrift had as wonderful a weekend as a farm can have, with what transpired with Got Stormy and with the Gormley colt from Lee Einsiedler and Bill Mott, High Oak. Jimmy Creed had the Casa Creed running. It was a it's funny because I literally, watching Ned Toffee be interviewed, I thought to myself, wow, this is really a nice you know, a nice circumstance for Spendthrift. And here we are days later, and the outpouring of appreciation for Wayne Hughes, just from every quarter, not just of the industry. But he was a guy hammer, in fact, that was a big part of that Clocker's Corner scene for many, many years.
He was. And, you know, just a stalwart here in California, obviously. And what bought Spencer Farm, I think, in 2002 and headed to Kentucky. And I came back to the California scene in 2000, so wasn't very familiar with him personally, but viewed him from afar. But a lot of stories. And one of those guys, as we're finding out, as the public's finding out, he got along with everybody. He tried to help people. A big booster, you a USC graduate, helps people
right.
along that way.
That's right.
Of course, started Public Storage, the company Public Storage. And I have to wonder, one of the guys here that we'll have on probably, but there's a little story going around that back in the early 70s when he started, they were trying to raise some money. And he was at Clocker's Corner, I guess, trying to hustle some people to join the, you know, throw some money in the till. And he had an idea about a company. And, you know, I'm not sure who was at the table or who said yes and who said no. But, you know, like I said, the rumor is him and his partner, you know, started that. And next thing you know, Public Storage is in every city in the country. And that kind of propelled him to be able to do a lot of the things that he did, not just in the horse business, philanthropically, in all kinds of the world. So very well liked, always had a smile on his face. One of those guys that when he came to the track, we knew about it. Mr. Hughes is here. Okay, make sure he's taken care of. And people wanted to know where Mr. Hughes was at all times. And you know, he just did a lot of things for everybody and, you know, was prominent in the game, especially in the breeding with some of his innovations that he had to bring Spendthrift Farm back into prominence.
Well, and you mentioned Spendthrift, and of course yesterday we talked with Sid, and I may in fact get Sid back before next Wednesday. Well, it's going to be tough because with so much to look forward to this weekend, including what's happening here, the Alabama back at Saratoga and the Lake Placid Saturday, we got to talk about the Queen's Plate as well. Got a very nice field, 13, for the feature at Woodbine on Sunday. There's a lot going on, but I think we'll at some point have a special presentation from Sid about Spendthrift from the innovation standpoint. And, you know, innovation, but at the same time, some of the things some of the aggressive posturing that Hughes brought to Spendthrift. And I can bring this up with Ned Toffee, I suppose. Ned's going to join us in about 10 minutes, and we'll start to pay tribute to B. Wayne. Boyd Browning will join us as well, and Gary Stevens and Richard Mandela. Richard might even come up and sit with us for a little bit, too. So the discussion is fascinating. I mean, there was the man, there was the business career, there was the interest and devotion to the industry, and you know, some of the business acumen that he essentially applied to what Spendthrift has become, which is a very large operation that has got the Share the Upside program, which he initiated in terms of, you know, buying in essentially to the stallions and having lifetime breeding rights. The enormous book that has essentially built Into Mischief into, you know, one of the leading, not just commercial stallions, but performance stallions in the game. And the MicroShare concept, Bob Baffert talked extensively during the Authentic run about, you know, Hughes coming to him and telling him how much potential this had. And, you know, it continues to grow and proliferate. A couple of other MicroShare operations have come to the fore. So B. Wayne Hughes' influence and his creativity, his commitment, will continue long after, for generations really to come, for as long as we're going to have racing, the influence of Hughes is a long shadow.
Well, he wasn't afraid to step out of the status quo and, and have enough influence to carry on some of his ideas. I think Sid would be great in that, give a little history of, before and after what Mr. Hughes did to Spendthrift. My recollection and my first flash is, of course, for me, was Beholder. And, if you look back at some of the pictures, and not that long ago, but, the thrill that on his face and everyone involved with her face. I'm sure we'll hear from Gary about that a little bit and Richard Mandela. But it's nice to see, people that have given to the game get back with a beautiful horse like she did. I can say maybe my only contribution to the situation was renaming the race the Beholder.
Well, the Mile. That's right.
Keith Brackbull was in charge of Sandy at the time, and I think they were together on a couple of partnerships. And I'm not afraid to change the name of a race. And it just, we changed the distance to a mile, and she won it the first time. And the next year, I think it was 2017, we got together and kind of said, you know what? Let's call it the Beholder Mile, and we did, and he came out and was very appreciative of that. So that she'll live on as long as we run that race. It's the only Grade One mile race on the dirt for fillies and mares. So, but that's what comes to mind, that race at Santa Anita. I'm sure Gary will be talking about that when he comes aboard. But you could just hear, you could feel it a little bit talking to people yesterday in the game, and it was just brought up quietly, and everyone will pay their respects in their own way. But a well-beloved man that did a lot of things.
And we, when you talk Beholder, and obviously if Stevens and Mandela are part of the tributes, well, you'll get plenty of Beholder. And the Beholder path, you think back, I think everybody just now thinks of all the highlights, but there were a couple of issues and there were a couple of challenges that Richard Mandela dealt with Beholder pretty famously. But she was part of that era. We had that parade of incredible fillies and mares. We still have them, but with Swiss Skydiver doing what she's doing and the career she's crafting.
She won the Beholder Mile.
There you go. That's right. There. That see? Perfect.
My only negative is I still see that stretch run in the Kentucky Oaks when she lost by a half a length at 9-1.
Everybody,
I tell you, after winning the Santa Anita Oaks, went there. It was 9-1. I couldn't believe it. And the Silmar horse of Todd's
Princess
of Silmar ended up. And I think she was 25 or 30-1.
She was a big prize.
And I don't think I backwheeled or anything. Of course not. But anyway,
in fact, we heard from high above. Not that it's that high, but from high above the Del Mar Grandstand, we did hear the voice of Gary Young. So if you're gonna talk about anguished Kentucky Oaks situations, Evening Jewel comes to the fore.
Yeah, in fact, we were at River Downs that day, and I think we heard him down in Kentucky. It was a rough beat. Was it who won that race? Hollendorfer?
Blind Luck.
Blind Luck, yes. Who actually ran her, came here and started her California career here at Del Mar. But
I've told this story way too often, which was during the week. You're getting the first look, at least the first look that I remembered at Blind Luck, and she was a little tiny thing, and she had patches on her torso from skin disease as a baby, and she just looked like a little nothing, and I thought, she's not that imposing, until the wire anyway.
Well, she was 2010 or 11, somewhere in there. And I was still working here at Del Mar, and Jerry Hollitzer came walking into the office, and he goes, hey, let me ask you about a race. And here's a guy who's won 7,000-8,000 races. He never comes in and asks for a race. He just picks up the book and runs. He goes, you know, I bought this filly from Florida. Can you run one of those non-winners at two, broke their maiden for 40, something like that? Yeah, no problem. One of the starter allowance races. And it was for her. So I think she made her second start in a little starter allowance race here at Del Mar. And, of course, won that and then went on to do other things. But I just remember him just, I got this nice filly. Maybe we can get a little race for her. And it turned out to be blind luck. I think she ran for maiden claiming, obviously, in her first start. I think it was at Calder. So, anyway, crazy things that you remember.
Well, that's what this is, right? That's the whole game. That's how all of us operate. We're going to have B. Wayne Hughes join us here and get started on some of the appreciations. That Toffee to appreciate B. Wayne Hughes, get the B. Wayne Hughes tributes started. And, one of those individuals that, you see a certain... You see a certain presentation and a certain fairly limited view as a horse player and a fan and casual observer. And so it was interesting when I asked Ned, I said, who else do you think would, and Mandela came to mind, of course, immediately. But, he talked about some of the riders. He said that absolutely that Hughes really enjoyed and Boyd Browning, he said, Boyd was somebody that he became close to. So we'll hear from as many as can come forward and starting appropriately at Spendthrift Farms with Ned Toffee. And Ned, speaking for horse players, for casual fans, for everybody who appreciated B. Wayne Hughes from afar and what he done for the industry. Deep sympathies to the farm and everybody there and the family.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. He really was a remarkable man and touched so many lives. Many of those people whose lives he touched will never know the effect he had, but he certainly had a great effect on my life and my family's life, and just a remarkable man.
Talk about your association. I mean, I think of you, and I think of Spendthrift as really as much as I do with B. Wayne.
Well, thank you. I'm really fortunate. I met Wayne in 1994 when I was a broodmare manager at Three Chimneys Farm, and I was fortunate enough to manage most of his mares there at Three Chimneys, and he had 20 or 25 mares there back then, and so we developed a relationship, and it's funny, I really didn't go to dinner with him. I just knew him, reported to him on his horses and communicated with him on his horses. And one day after I'd been at Three Chimneys for about 6 or 7 years, I ran into him out at the yearling sales, and he came up next to me and he said, I'm thinking about buying a farm. Would you come run it for me? And at the time he didn't have a place picked out. It took, I think 8 or 9 months before he found a place, and called me up and he said, we found a place and I think you've heard of it, and I about fell out of my chair when I heard that it was Spendthrift Farm, signed on pretty quickly. Although he likes to give me a hard time, he for years gave me a hard time. Loved to tell the story that when I sat down to discuss the deal with him, I told him I needed 24 hours to think about it and talk about it with my wife, and he never let me forget that I didn't immediately say yes. And he loves to tell the story that my wife said to me, "Why didn't you say yes?" So anyway, I got right back to him, and you know, started with him. He bought the farm in 2004, and I came over from Three Chimneys then, and have been here ever since with him. And it's just been a remarkable project to be a part of. And I think, as he said, you know, he really had an appreciation for the history here at Spendthrift, but nowhere near the appreciation that he developed after being here for a short time and getting feedback from so many people and thanks from so many people for what he did to restore such an iconic farm. So it's been an honor for me to just be a small part of that.
Talk to that that essence, because of course, you know, Spendthrift and under Hughes's direction, you know, the innovations. You know, here's a business mind that literally, you know, there's billionaires and then there's self-made billionaires. he clearly had. You know, ideas about the industry, and he obviously appreciated the tradition, but at the same time wanted to bring, you know, I suppose more current and more marketing driven elements to, you know, what a stallion farm can be. And Ned, I mentioned in the opening that didn't necessarily sit well with everybody. You know, kind of talk about share the upside and the big books and you know, yeah, the things that he tried and you know, did how much of it was just the force of his will and the force of his creativity. How much input did he take from, you know, from industry veterans?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing I could certainly spend all day and more on. But, you know, he was somebody who came to this with a unique perspective because he had been a thoroughbred owner and breeder for many, many years. But, you know, prior to owning the farm, he was so involved in the running of public storage that I don't think he, you know, it was once after that he in 2004 when he did buy the farm that he began to turn his full attention to the industry and really began to think about his experiences and how that would shape, you know, what he would do. And one of the things that he used to say that I will never forget, he used to love to say, let's make some mistakes. And he loved the idea of let's get out there, let's try something new. Let's see if it works. But he was so concerned about making things work for breeders and particularly small breeders. And you know, he said, you know, I guess sort of a more common quote now that, you know, they're breeders are the backbone of our industry, and he really, really appreciated that. And so he really wanted to make things work for the industry. So that's what Share the Upside was all about, allowing breeders that supported a young, inexpensive horse to be able to continue to use that horse. If he was successful and got very expensive, they would still be able to use them even if he rose out of their price range, because they would have, you know, by that time they'd have become our partners in the horse, because they'd have earned a lifetime breeding right. And so, you know, helping small breeders and making this accessible to them and work for everybody was paramount to him. And so much of what we've done over the years started with that thinking.
I reached out to Josh Pons. We're doing some you know, some work with him, and went to Country Life cover our mayor Volterine with Mosler. And you know, one of the things I thought about, just because I had been during Preakness week, I, you know, spent the week in Maryland and some time over at Country Life, and you know, there's so much Malibu Moon related material in the house and in the office and all over the farm, and a lot of what we think of currently of Spendthrift, you know, that has, you know, morphed into kind of just the powerhouse, starts with Malibu Moon. And it seems like that was, I suppose, a perfect, you know, a perfect example of his, you know, his approach and his savvy in terms of, you know, building something around an individual, you know, in this case, you know, a sire with potential.
Yeah, and I think that's another one of the great sort of Wayne-isms that I'll always remember is nobody knows. And I think Malibu Moon was a perfect example. He started off as a $3,000 stud fee in Maryland, and, you know, all you can do is give horses like him a shot, and if the horse is good enough, they'll rise to the occasion, and they'll become successful. And I think Malibu Moon really formed a lot of Wayne's thinking over the years, as well as his, you know, vast business experiences. But I think Malibu Moon did a lot to form Wayne's thinking. And of course, Malibu Moon, you know, as Wayne said, put us on the map, and brought a lot of credibility to Spendthrift when we brought him over here. And it's nice because he was a homebred for Wayne.
Right.
Of course, we lost Malibu Moon earlier this year, and
yep.
Not long before that, we lost Macumba, Malibu Moon's dam, but she lived out her days here at Spendthrift as well. But I know Josh and his whole family, you know, really appreciate the experience they had with Wayne. And Wayne was a remarkable guy and a tough businessman, but a fair guy. And you always, you know, knew right where you stood with him. I know they really value that experience with Wayne, and we sure appreciate the job they did in helping Malibu Moon's career get going.
Well, how did he deal with setbacks? I think it's a big part of the story because he did not have immediate success as an owner and a breeder.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was so rooted in the running of Public Storage back early on that really was where so much of his attention was focused, and I think that this a lot of the industry stuff was a little bit more of a diversion, and as I said, he was around the time he bought Spendthrift, he was beginning to he was still certainly very involved in Public Storage, but he was a little bit less involved in the day-to-day running. And so I think Spendthrift gave him something to really focus his attention on. And I think one thing that anyone who's worked at Spendthrift has gotten to see, that when he sets his mind on an idea, it's just remarkable to watch. He is absolutely dogged in his determination to develop an idea, to continue, to never rest on that laurel, but to continue to try to develop, make, tweak it, make it better. Even when he had a good thing, he would always be saying, well, how can we do this better? Never being complacent, never being satisfied. But in terms of setbacks, I don't think I've ever seen anybody who was less deterred by a setback. It was simply, you know, move forward. You know, over the years, in the 24 or so years that I've known him, I certainly had to give him, you know, his share of bad news over the years, and I've never been around anybody who handled that better, who was less fazed by it, always wanted to learn from anything that had gone wrong, but never deterred him in the least. It was always move forward, and that was another great thing that he used to always say, is that this is a great business because you're always looking forward. But I think that's so true of Wayne, that he was always looking forward.
The success that was distilled from, you know, from essentially, you know, the time that he spent in the game and developing whether it was concepts or you know the interests, really there's been a steady parade in the last decade, and the run with Beholder and Richard Mandela, we're going to talk to this morning, central to a lot of the success, and really you know Beholder won. I think maybe one of the pinnacles of success, and then Authentic, and you know Bob Baffert getting him, you know late in life getting him a Derby win, and it kind of falls into. If that win now, I think people realize it at the time too. It's going to stand up with the Mrs. Genter and with Paul Mellon. You know, it was one of those kinds of wins. Somebody that wanted to win the Derby wouldn't have been, you know, heartsick and bitterly disappointed if it never came, but so appreciative of what it meant.
Yeah, and he always was so appreciative of everything that everybody did for him in this industry, and he really appreciated what a remarkable job Richard did with Beholder in terms of managing her career, and I think it was a really a tribute to Wayne too as an owner in the way that he handled things between he and his trainers, because you know it was very much. We'll hire people for their expertise and then let them do their job. You know, that was the approach he took with Richard and with Beholder and with Bob later, with Authentic as well. That's again, one of the remarkable, you don't see that with just everybody. But those were great experiences for him. I was always so sad that he didn't get to go to the Derby that year that he won. But he was certainly at home, and there's a pretty well known video now of him. He and a lot of his family watching that, and he just was absolutely beside himself. And you know the My Racehorse project, which is another. One of the things that he really sank his teeth into late in life that was so important to him, because I think he really felt like My Racehorse has the opportunity to sort of float all boats, to that it can be good for the whole industry, bring more new people in and get new involvement in the industry. And so he was so happy to be able to share that with them, and that you know one of the things that he told them early on when we first met with Michael Behrens was, you know, you're doing great things, but you need some really good horses. And so to within a year of that statement to be winning the Derby with them really pretty remarkable. So I know that was really important to him because of what it could do for our sport.
On that topic, in fact, Ned Toffee with us as we start a series of appreciations of B. Wayne Hughes. In a lot of ways, and I really hadn't thought about this until the news yesterday, but his biggest business, of course, with Public Storage and mm-hmm. then the American Homes for Rent concept. Mm-hmm. They both showed a very savvy understanding of people's needs, and the My Racehorse concept and the micro share concept really is a natural, not necessarily a natural extension, but clearly has got elements that made made Wayne such a success in business.
I think that's one of the things that I learned. I felt like I knew him pretty well when I came to Spendthrift, but again I got to know him so well over the years and learned so much more. I realized that at the time I really only was scratching the surface, and it was remarkable to watch him. He's a brilliant, brilliant man. Incredibly intelligent, incredible logic skills, and it was sometimes infuriating that you would have a debate with him and on a subject that you thought you knew more about than him, and then he would really out-argue you. But he had that kind of brain. But one of the remarkable things about him is that he welcomed the argument with you. You know, he challenged everybody here at Spendthrift to challenge any ideas, whether they were his ideas or anyone else's ideas. You know, he wanted a healthy debate over anything that we were going to do. And I watched many, many people, staffers and otherwise, get into very, you know, very spirited debates over you know, potential policies or programs or anything else that it might be. And at the end of it, you know, he would thank you. And not every, you know, not everybody is that way. But, it, you know, again, back to the public storage and my resource, I think one of the other things I learned about him was his, how quick and easy it was for him to think on a very, very grand scale. And on a scale that most of us don't think on and that we're not used to thinking on. The scale or the scope of a project never slowed him down at all. Matter of fact, for him, the bigger the better, and I think he understood the value of that. And so much of what he did was really for the good of the game. I mean, when he had a horse named That's What I'm Talking About, and I forget what derby that was. I want to say that was 2003, maybe. Or maybe the 04, that would have been right before I started with him. But he finished fourth. But, you know, he allowed Steven Spielberg to buy into that horse. And he said to me, he said, I know darn well, he owns only a small percentage, I know darn well the headline's not going to be Wayne Hughes wins the Derby, it's going to be Spielberg wins the Derby. And he said, that's fine, because that'll be a good thing for our sport. You know, I've never seen anybody less concerned with getting credit or attention for something. He did things because he thought they were important, and I think the satisfaction of knowing that they were important was all that was really important to him.
For the personnel, for the staff, and for the farm, and the people that you know, he devoted the last several decades to. Nobody is that successful that doesn't have outstanding interpersonal skills and training skills. What does his departure mean at the farm? And Ned, you know, just talk about the future a little bit.
Well, you know. You know, this is a transition that's been, you know, in the works for a good year or so now, and his daughter Tammy Gustafson and her husband Eric Gustafson own and operate the farm, and I think in recent months and over the last year, I think the people have seen Eric much more front and center.
Yes.
And taking a prominent role And you know, I think that it's every intention of continuing on very much as we have been. You know, last November we stepped up and made a huge investment in buying Monomoy Girl and Got Stormy and some other very, very nice mares. And you know, I remember the discussion with Mr. Hughes was, yeah, I'd like to go big in November. And after that, it was Eric and Tammy that really approved the horses and the amounts and stepped up and bid on some very, you know, very high profile, very high, you know, very pricey animals. So, you know, I think their commitment is very, very strong to the farm and to the industry. And you know, I think we all here, I think we all have learned so much from Wayne. And I think one of the reasons he was comfortable to turn his attention to my racehorse so much in recent years was, one, because he always loved a new project and the challenge of starting something new, and two, because I think he felt that he had pretty well established Spendthrift and had the right people in place, and that was so important to him, the idea of getting really good people, and he constantly reinforced to me that you have to have the right people. There's maybe a tendency in management to be intimidated about hiring maybe somebody too good or somebody that you're threatened by, and Wayne was acknowledged that and went in the exact opposite direction. He wanted to hire the strongest people that he could, and that's something that he did over and over, and really embraced everybody's role and welcomed everybody's role and everybody's input. And I think everybody here knew that they could offer input, and he valued that. Just a remarkable management style that way.
Well, I stood on the track apron, Ned, just days ago at Saratoga, and watched you interviewed after got Stormy's win, and that a payoff, in B. Wayne Yu's philosophy and approach, having a mare like this, continue on and reward the investment and the faith with another grade one. And half an hour earlier you'd seen a Son of Gormley get a graded stake win, and I was thinking about B. Wayne last Saturday, and it seems like that was a nice coda, and I hope he was able to enjoy Saturday.
Well, it was a fitting day, and the horse, the farm, the horses, the people here are we're one very small part of just an incredible legacy that he leaves, and people have said to me, and my phone blew up last night when this broke, and I don't know how many hours I spent returning messages and phone calls and emails and just the well wishers just overwhelming. The legacy he leaves in our industry is remarkable. It's such a small part of his overall legacy and his impact on this world that he, he was such a humble guy, and he did so much philanthropic and charitable work that he actually insisted that it not be made public. And to him, for him, I don't think he felt this way about everybody, but for him, he said, publicizing that work diminished it for him. It was important to him to know that he had done, all these great things, but he wasn't looking for credit for it. And the impact on the not just the industry but the whole world is really going to be, it's just staggering.
I've heard some of those kinds of stories in the past, and I know there'll be more that'll come out, now that that he's gone, and people will reflect on what he did for them, and what those that want to pay tribute can do in lieu of flowers. The family is simply asking for donations to the B. Wayne Yu's Fund at UK Healthcare. P.O. Box 34184, Lexington 40588, UK Healthcare, the B. Wayne Yu's Fund, P.O. Box 34184, Lexington Kentucky, KY40588. Ned Toffee, I greatly appreciate it. We're going to talk to Richard Mandela and Gary Stevens, Boyd Browning standing by as well, and the tributes will pour in for days here to B-Way News. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Ned Toffee, Spendthrift Farm. And as I mentioned, Boyd Browning listening in and standing by. And when I asked Ned last night, who would B-Way want paying tribute to him? And the first name that that Ned offered was Boyd Browning. And and when I reached out to Boyd, unfortunately, I've reached out to you too often fairly recently for this kind of duty. But you obviously were as impressed and appreciative of his friendship and what he brought to the business as anyone. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. And, at least in this situation, it's a tribute to a life well lived and a full and significant life. So it was, Wayne, he did it all. I mean, there's very few people who, if you look at what they accomplished, and as Ned was alluding to, not just in our industry, but the activities and the impact that he made on the rest of the world at large, no pun intended, and he was just a remarkable man. He was very, 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 very intimidating initially for me because his brilliance and his intellect was just overwhelming. You could see his mind going literally 1,000 miles an hour. And the first time I kind of met with him, I was unprepared for not the challenges, but just the sheer brilliance and the questions that he asked and the mind, the activity he had of his mind. And, he was an immensely hard worker. Wayne was very, very, very active until, very, very recently. Great intellect, great, great work capacity. The heart of gold that he tried to hide. but you really, once you kind of got to know him, you realized that, what a special guy he was and how much he cared about other people and how much he cared about so many causes. And, he was just a tremendous man. And he'll be greatly missed by all of us in the third world industry and by people all over America. So he's a wonderful guy.
Boyd, talk a little bit, because you've got a unique perspective of people that invest in the industry and in various in the various ways you can. And I touched on this with Ned Toffee a little bit, and I suppose somebody like Richard Mandela can reflect too. The success, he had consistent success of varying degrees, but you talk about the hard work. He had setbacks that that might have seen him walk away, and we certainly know and on a regular basis have people come into the game think that their business sense and success and so forth will instantly translate it to our game, and that is not so readily the case. What did you sense about him that the perseverance and the work ethic that I'm sure is part of it, but the things he brought to the game are going to have this ongoing impact.
Well, without any question, I almost think when you look at Wayne's tenure in the thoroughbred industry, there's kind of a before and after. I mean, he had moderate success, and that's probably being generous and kind, calling it moderate success for many, many years on the racing side of things, with buying a lot of expensive horses and really didn't achieve the success that one would expect, given both his background and his investment. And as you alluded to, a lot of times people would walk away. Well, walk away was not in Wayne's vocabulary or in his mindset. And he was determined to find a process and to find people that made it work for him. And, you know, I think that his association with Richard Mandela on the racing side of things was probably instrumental in turning around his racing program. He got engaged, began to enjoy success. But he also, when he enjoyed the success, Wayne also wanted to make the game better. He wasn't satisfied with the status quo. He was always challenging both his team at Spendthrift and folks like me. How to do? You know, how can you make the sales better? What can we do better? I saw him in some board meetings at times and was certainly not afraid to challenge the institutions of our industry to say, is this right? Can we do this differently? How do we improve the game? But Wayne just brought a perspective of great curiosity, of great desire, as I said, just to make it better, to make the process better, to introduce new people to the game. You know, there was no question that he wanted to Spendthrift became his legacy. And, you know, he's changed the stallion game. He's had a dramatic influence on potentially the racing business of my racehorse. But heck, 2 months ago, I was having a conversation with him, and he was like, how the hell is this man at this age got so many great ideas? I feel like an idiot sometimes talking to Wayne, because it's like just the sheer brilliance and the smile on his face and then the grin, and he knew he had me stumped, and he was just thrilled the hell out of him when he stumped me, which he did with great regularity, I might add. But he had a genuine desire to make it better, was willing to adapt his philosophies, and was willing to make changes to make the process better, and his accomplishments, you know, over the last 10, 15 years are frankly remarkable. And more importantly, I think that those accomplishments are going to have a lasting effect for many, many years and generations to come.
As Ned Toffee explained, obviously Spendthrift will continue. This has been a good period. It feels, Boyd, and this is sort of occurring to me as I say it, with what. Wayne brought to Spendthrift, and of course the great heritage and the Combs, you know, going back, and then you think about what Brad Kelly's done at Calumet, reinvention of Hillendale by John Secura. It feels like I suppose Windstar should be part of this idea of this suggestion as well. It feels in some ways that Wayne Hughes raised everybody's game and elevated everybody to be, you know, to invest and to innovate and to improve.
Well, I don't think there's any question when Wayne, he rocked the world in Kentucky, particularly in the stallion game at Spendthrift, when he had some ideas that were very, very, very different than the traditional approaches to stallions and stallion management, to say the least. And then when you achieve the success, and I think if Wayne was on this call right now, he'd say, you know, we never thought that Into Mischief would become what he's become. But Wayne also was very humble. He said he was very, very lucky in virtually every aspect of his life and in every aspect of business. And, you know, my sense is, and we've been around a lot of folks that tend to be consistently lucky because they work so hard, because they approach things differently, because they're willing to make an investment, they're willing to do things that they believe in. And Wayne was damn sure willing to make a stand. He was willing to to tell you straight up what he was doing. He was willing to support it with his financial resources. But he was also doing it, you know, oftentimes to quote unquote help the what he viewed as the little guy, the breeder, the person who may not have had as much of an opportunity in the world in the thoroughbred industry as he thought they deserved. And he was a man of high principles. A lot of folks didn't always agree with his principles. You knew where Wayne stood. He stood by his beliefs passionately, and he was just, you know, 110% genuine. And he was the other thing is that Wayne was at heart a regular guy.
Right.
As crazy as that sounds, Wayne was a regular guy. Most of our meetings took place at Cracker Barrel, right down the street from our office, and right around the corner from Spinner, because that's where Wayne went. That's where Wayne liked to go, to Cracker Barrel. And the bacon had to be extra crispy when he ordered his bacon. So he did have a few things that he was pretty definitive about as well. The bacon better be extra crispy. If not, he was sending it back. But Wayne was, you know, in a pair of blue jeans. He'd walk in. He knew the cashier at the Cracker Barrel. He had a couple of favorite waiters or waitresses. And was most comfortable just talking to him like one-on-one, like a regular guy. And that was the thing that was kind of fascinating to be around him a little bit, is just, you know, treat him like one of the boys. I mean, just like, you know, like your next-door neighbor or you know, just a genuine friend. That's how he wanted to be approached. That's how he wanted to be talked to. Don't BS him. I mean, I tried to BS him a time or two, and it was devastating because his BS meter was pretty sensitive. Tell him the truth, whether it was what he wanted to hear or not wanted to hear. Tell him what you believed. We had some wonderful arguments because he could get passionate about thoughts and I could get passionate about thoughts, but there was always that underlying respect, and the mind was just amazing, and the energy. You know, I kind of compared it, you know, one time I had an opportunity to fly with Jess Jackson, and I was tired. I was like, oh, great, I'm going to have an hour and a half to sleep. And Jess Jackson broke out a yellow legal pad, and for an hour and a half, just, I mean, it was like the brilliance and the desire to learn, or desire to question, and desire to do things better was evident in a guy like Jess Jackson. It was so evident in a guy like Wayne Hughes. They were so, so active. They were just so... They're just wired differently, and but was inherently, Mr. Hughes was inherently fair. He wanted you to do well, and he wanted to do well, and he was just a damn good guy.
Well, I hope I had an appropriate sentiment with the note I put on Twitter last night as I was traveling west. I got the sense, thinking about it, Boyd, that, you know, the industry really should consider itself fortunate and be proud that someone like Wayne Hughes devoted so much time, attention, resource to the sport. It's to the game's everlasting credit.
No question. And to the game's credit, Wayne loved. He had so much fun and so much enjoyment over the last 15 years with his involvement. I don't know if it's exactly 15 to 20 years at Spindrift. He was really, really proud of what he and his team accomplished, and it was remarkable. But he loved being in Kentucky. He loved being on the farm. He loved being at the races. He loved being around horses. He loved being around horse people. That's, I think that's one of the reasons he was so compelled and driven to like my racehorse, is that Wayne genuinely, he loved the business, and he loved being a participant in the business, and he wanted to share that same passion and the same feelings with as many people as he could.
Boyd Browning, everyone, from Fasig Tipton, of course, and friendship and business relationship, and obvious appreciation for Hughes' commitment to the game. Boyd, I whenever we lose somebody like this, you say to yourself and you think, you know, how do you replace them? And you can't replace the individual per se, but people like him. Not that there's many. They seem drawn to this game. So we can only hope that, you know, more of his ilk, keep coming and keep helping the game improve and survive and thrive.
Well, no question. And the other thing, I think what Wayne would tell you and he would tell me is don't sit around and mourn my loss. Hopefully let me be an inspiration to you and others to do better. Period. End of the session. Get your tails to work, boys. That's what he tells you in that boat. Right? He's just on my show saying, enough of these niceties. You and Bick get to work. Start the game. Let's do something positive.
Well, on that note, too, and I should take the opportunity, congratulations to everybody involved on the week plus of sale at Saratoga. We the New York sale was a big hit, and the Open, of course, essentially matching up to 2019. And so the sincere portion of the yearling market kicked off in great fashion and style in Saratoga. Well done.
Thank you.
Boyd Browning, everybody. Fasig Tipton. Let's take a break. Top of the hour. An hour in. Ned Toffee and Boyd Browning starting us off to pay tribute to B. Wayne Hughes. We are going to look around here for Richard Mandela, and it's going to be it shouldn't be hard. I'm at Del Mar. It's not huge. I mean, the fairgrounds are big, but should be able to find Richard here in the next couple of hours. Let's take a timeout, and Gary Stevens is going to join us here in this half hour as well, and more. And we've got plenty of race news and coverage to dive into. Hammer stepped out. He'll be back at 8 o'clock. I'm very adroitly, I think, stepping into the Pacific time zone. attitude. Well, there's one of those Longines clocks that I'm looking at right here in the paddock of Del Mar. Where it's just a couple of minutes after 7, a couple after 10, back east, and heavy rain flooding parts of the backstretch at Saratoga. Off the turf completely today. Yesterday, though, the two stakes got successfully run. We'll talk about the Jonathan Sheppard, which had a very fitting, it seems, you would think, result with Kerry Breon sweeping the top slots. And we'll catch up on some of yesterday's draws. Queen's Plate, what's happening here Saturday, of course, Pacific Classic Day, and more. Alabama at Saratoga. Back after this to Del Mar at the races, Sirius XM.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Tickets for the Run Happy Travers are on sale now for just $15. Don't miss Saratoga's biggest day of the season. The Run Happy